Journalist Nicola Tano spent more than 5 years living and reporting in Africa, but the relationship she cultivated with several women with HIV and AIDS became more than that of a reporter and subject. They became, under difficult circumstances, friends and confidants. Tano chronicles these women's stories in her latest book, No Place Left to Bury the Dead: Denial, Despair, and Hope in the African AIDS Pandemic. She told me how one young woman dealt with the disease and with her own past.
Seletso is in her early 20s, and she had kind of a wild youth and got pregnant very young, had her son Tabong, I think at the age of 18, and realized within about 6 months that he was severely disabled. And I think really wasn't quite sure how to deal with this and basically ran away and left her son to be cared for by her family. And then about 5 years later, she began to fall ill and become sick, and she basically went home to her home village to die. And her son at that point had also, really his whole life had been quite ill. But fortunately, at that point in Botswana, the government was beginning to offer antiretroviral drugs. And so she was able, along with her son, to enroll in the antiretroviral drugs program. And so I met her just about the time that she started taking the drugs, both she and her son. And the transformation really was quite remarkable. I mean, when I first met her, she was rail thin and had just looked really, her body was just really ravaged. And Tabong was tiny. I mean, he was 5 years old, but he looked like an 18-month-old. He couldn't speak. He couldn't sit up. He couldn't walk. He couldn't talk. And really, to watch the transformation they went through over the period of a year was amazing. And at the same time, it didn't really solve a lot of the underlying problems. They were still very poor. She still was saddled with this really enormous burden of caring for a child who's both extremely physically disabled and HIV positive. And I think she really struggled with, you know, she wanted to live and she still is doing very well, but she also, she had these sort of demons that kept pursuing her, I think.
You have a really interesting section where you talk about basically ethical decisions that reporters have to make. And in essence, you say, most reporters wouldn't think anything of taking a government minister out for a fancy dinner, but they wouldn't buy mealy meal and vegetables for a poor family. And yet they're extracting the same, if not more, amounts of information from the poor family as from the government minister. You made a decision in some of these cases to really try to help the family. How did you make that decision?
Well, I mean, I think I realized from the very beginning when I was starting the process of doing research for this book that I wasn't going to be able to maintain a completely objective journalistic stance, you know, if the idea was to go back again and again over a long period. And, you know, one of the advantages of writing a book as opposed to a newspaper article or something shorter is that you do have the luxury of being able to explain that relationship to the readers. But I do think we need to question some of our assumptions about people, particularly in the developing world. And I'm not sure that the rules that were designed in the West, in America, and that work very well in America, I think generally apply in situations where you really are talking about life and death situations. That said, I often was frustrated with my own inability to figure out how to help, even when I wanted to. You know, it was a difficult relationship often, trying to decide how to draw those lines, how to create those boundaries, because you do have to have boundaries of a sort. And I guess I did feel like I couldn't spend all of this time with these families and sort of walk away and do nothing.
When you look at this book that you have written, and it's got a fairly tough title, No Place Left to Bury the Dead, Denial, Despair, and Hope in the African AIDS Pandemic. Do you think that this book has a lot of hope, or is this really about the death of a people, the death of nations?
Certainly during the years that I was in South Africa, and I think the years that in many ways this book primarily chronicles, there was new hope, and that is antiretroviral drugs did change enormously, not only people's individual lives and the lives of people who enrolled in the programs, but also I think the way that the disease and the epidemic was seen in Africa. I think it's no longer quite as scary. It's no longer quite as fearful a thing as it was 10 years ago when you were infected and it was a death sentence. It might be 2 years or 5 years, but you knew you were going to die and you knew you were going to die very soon in the future. And I think in that sense, yes, there is more hope today than there was before. But that said, there's still many parts of Africa, even many parts of Southern Africa, where people don't have access to these. And again, they don't in themselves solve all of the problems. And, you know, AIDS is very much tied to other problems of development, of poverty, of governance. And until those issues are addressed, not just by the international community, but also by countries themselves and communities themselves, you know, this will continue to be a problem. And I certainly don't see this issue, the problem of AIDS, going away anytime in the near future. This is something that will be with us for years and decades in the future.
You don't get into this in your book. It has happened or blossomed much more after the time period, the time window you look at. But so much of activism around AIDS today is centered around celebrity-based activism, whether it's Bono or Angelina Jolie. Is that a useful prism for Americans in particular to understand the disease?
I mean, I think it's been good in the sense that it has brought more attention to the disease. I mean, I think, you know, if you looked 7 or 8 years ago, people were dying in huge numbers, and there really was very little international recognition that this was a problem. And it wasn't really until about 2000, I would say, that the world kind of began to wake up to what was happening. And in that sense, I think celebrities have been useful. And I also think you have to divide celebrities. There are celebrities who I think have done very pragmatic things, for example, Bono and the Red Project, or President Clinton and his negotiation with drug companies to lower the price of antiretroviral drugs. And you know, they have really marshaled their star power in order to do those things, in order to push companies to donate money, in order to push drug companies to lower their prices. I do worry a bit that people come and get pictures of themselves taken with AIDS orphans, but they don't really understand what's happening.
On a very practical level, someone reading this book who doesn't really have a connection to AIDS through their family, through their friends, doesn't have a connection to Africa, what should they get out of it, or what do you want them to get out of it?
I mean, I think the most important thing I wanted people to get out of it is that to sort of humanize the people who are dealing with, and humanize the places and the world in which this is happening. Because I think it's very easy, the statistics are so staggering, it's very easy to forget that there are real people behind it. And so I wanted to point out that they are real people, and they're not angels, they're not saints, they're ordinary people with flaws and problems and who make mistakes just like we do, but they are real people. And I think the other key thing that I would like people to come out of it with is that we need to be very careful about the assumptions that we make about other places, and very careful about imposing those assumptions when we try to help. For example, I talk a lot about testing and HIV testing, and the way in which a model that was very much designed in the United States to protect within the context of the American epidemic, which was centered, of course, early on among gay men, to protect the privacy of people. And that was a very alien concept and a very alien system that was then imposed on Africa. And I think a lot of African medical professionals that I spoke to really think that was not only ineffective, but actually damaging, and may have increased the fear and the stigma around the disease. So we need to be very careful about the assumptions that we make.
Nicole, thank you.
You're welcome. Thank you.
Journalist Nicole Atano is the author of No Place Left to Bury the Dead, Denial, Despair, and Hope in the African AIDS Pandemic. You can read an excerpt from the book at our website, nprnewsandnotes.org.